our podcast about becoming mothers through the gift of surrogacy. We shared our stories with you in Season 1 and even picked up a British Podcast Award along the way. In Season 2, we want you to hear from key members of the surrogacy community. We'll be asking what it's like to know that you've been born through surrogacy, what it feels like when your mum becomes a surrogate, and how it feels when your best friend offers to be your surrogate. Not forgetting the voices of the incredible women who have given birth to our children for us. With advice from medical and legal professionals, we hope that this season continues to bust the sensationalised headlines and gives you everything you need to know about surrogacy from the perspective of the girl next door. Happy listening!
This season of The Intended Parent is sponsored by Macmillan Cancer Support. Macmillan give people with cancer everything they've got. If you're diagnosed, your worries are their worries. They will move mountains to help you live life as fully as you can. And they don't stop there. They're going all out to find even better ways to help people with cancer, helping to bring forward the day when everyone gets life-transforming support from day one. Throughout my own treatment and in the years since, the Macmillan nurses have always been there when I needed them. Whether that was a squeeze of the hand during an examination or being at the other end of the phone or email when my anxieties got the better of me, their support has and will continue to be invaluable.
Hi guys, it's just Fran and Karina here today.
Hello.
A little bit lonely, but we're here. We're going to wrap up season two today and just sort of go through all of the incredible people who've contributed to this series of The Intended Parent and reflect a little bit on everything we've learned and heard. So our first guest was G, and you know, we've said it time and time again, we cried so much in that episode, didn't we?
We did, and I just couldn't believe it. She sort of just like appeared from nowhere. We were, you know, she was just absolutely the perfect guest to start with. And I stumbled across her details one night and got in touch and was just amazed that she said yes and she wanted to talk to us. And it was just an absolute pleasure. And it just to sort of see what we hope that one day our children will become and will think of, I guess, our journeys.
So heartwarming, and like you say, she was a beautiful find that we actually didn't expect to find her. But the one thing that I really loved about her was her honesty and her authenticity, and she just was so proud of how she'd come to be, wasn't she?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and it just, and the relationships that she still had with everybody that was involved in that journey as well was, again, just everything that sort of I hope that 20 years down the line we're still gonna have with our own surrogate.
Yeah, and she made it quite clear that those relationships were really important to her, and I think that's really nice to hear. And I know you see Gina and Ian a lot more than I probably see Laura or Ina, just because of geography, not because of anything else. But you know, whenever anyone asks us if your surrogates are still in your life or if your children all know how they came to be, you know, there's never any hesitation. You know, I always think it's odd that someone would ask me that question, because for me, you know, it's super important that the children know where they've come from. But what I loved about G was, I guess she's a different generation to us, isn't she? But she has so much wisdom. And I think we found that a little bit with Ellie and Ada, didn't we, when we spoke to them?
Mm. Yeah, I found it was a little bit more of a raw episode, I think. But perhaps, again, just due to that sort of with the age, but it was so nice to just hear their sort of honesty, and it was just so interesting to see how they were so honest about how their thoughts about the journeys that their mothers had actually been on had impacted them, and how their thoughts had changed, and how it had gone from something that was quite abstract, I guess, at the beginning that they sort of thought was going to be able to sort of just pass them by, I guess, to then suddenly these babies arrived and it couldn't pass them by.
No, and they have a lot of pride for it. And, you know, it's interesting, actually, because weirdly, I probably have more interaction with Ada because she's on social media more than her mum and she sees the kids more. And I think it's, you know, I love the fact that she's watching from a distance at the miracle that her mum made. I mean,
they had so much pride for their mums as
well. Yeah. I'm like welling up while we're talking about this just because, you know, that it's great when, you know, when someone decides they want to be a surrogate, but when that decision has such a positive ripple effect on the rest of their family, it's mind-blowing, isn't it? And, you know, I would have sat there as intended parents one day thinking, you know, we hope someone will carry our children, but it's actually so much more than someone just carrying our children. It changes lives.
It does change lives. It changes lives for everybody as well. And I think that was really, prevalent when Kate was talking. We spoke to Kate and Gina, who were both in surrogates, and Kate talked about the impact on her family as well. And I think, you know, we talk about how surrogacy impacted our own sort of families. It ripples outwards, and it's not just us, but it's the grandparents, it's the aunties and uncles that suddenly felt that maybe one day families wouldn't happen for us, and then they did. So it has this huge impact and ripple effect in our families. But it was interesting talking to them about those ripple effects that happen in their own families. And for Kate, some of the things that she'd been through and still, still continued on, you know, those.
I remember when we followed her story sort of live as she was going through all of the struggles in her various sort of surrogacy journeys. And you just think, what a human being, you know, to continue trying to get pregnant for an intended parent because she feels so passionately about surrogacy being her purpose. But also with Kate, I found that it did more than just change her. Well, it was more about just the surrogacy journeys. She really sort of gave off that message that surrogacy changed her life and her perception towards things and how she approached life. And it's just amazing, you know, and it's probably amazing, probably doesn't even do it, you know, it doesn't do it justice, but to think that, you know, someone who's struggling with infertility can actually have such a positive impact on the life of someone who's able to have children naturally.
It's and it's funny, you know, even with sort of Gina, I think Gina and Kate now are not going to sort of able to sort of be surrogates again, but they're still both so immersed in that world as well.
Yeah.
And that's what I just think, you know, every time we see Gina and Ian and I catch up with her and she's, you know, she's still putting herself out there helping so many couples and just, you know, being that listening ear, giving that advice. Gina.
I think that's so important, isn't it? I mean, that's all, you know, almost that's like, you and I, who we've had our children now, and we're not looking to go again. But there's just such a wonderful community who just want to raise people who come up behind them. If it's someone who's looking to be a surrogate, or if it's, you know, an intended parent, the community is everything. And you know, I've said it time and time again. Gina was just, you know, she's your surrogate, but she's the very first person I met in the surrogacy community, my first coffee with her was just so warm and welcoming, and she had Evelyn in her tummy there, and it just gave me so much hope. And, you know, I didn't know who you were at that time, but I was just sitting there looking at her thinking, God, you're incredible, and the woman who you're going to make a mother is so lucky, because you're so full of just a desire to give. Like, it was so selfless. It felt so selfless. Like, and that's her commitment to the community and her commitment to surrogacy is just incredibly, you know, she's so impassionate about it.
I think like you say, I mean, we've talked about obviously how much we get out of it, but I think for women who are surrogates, in terms of the ones that we've spoken to, they also get a lot out of it. And it's, you know, the word empowerment, I think, always springs to mind when I think about it, you know, women empowering women, and that sort of feeling of, I mean, you know, being able to give that gift I just think is, you know, for anyone to be able to do that in their lifetime, I'm not sure how you can top it.
No, I don't think you can. I think it's the ultimate, isn't it? The ultimate act of women empowering women. And there's so much in the media about, you know, we during this series, there was that article that came out in the New Statesman that was so derogatory towards surrogacy. And you just think, you don't know it. To pass judgment like that, you do not understand the ins and outs of the surrogacy community. And it's far from any sort of abuse or trade or whatever it was that person who wrote the article was trying to say. This is about people giving each other the greatest gift there is to give, and respecting each other along the way and empowering each other along the way. And I think when you see it and approach it from that perspective, it's nothing but beautiful.
Yeah.
What was really interesting was Kate had been sort of a traditional and a gestational surrogate. And do you remember the chats we had with G? And she saw her sibling, who was someone who was a member of another family but conceived via the same egg, well, the egg from the same mother. She saw that person as her siblings, but Kate's children have never seen surrogate children as siblings. So it's really interesting how sort of the family dynamic just depends. I guess, I don't know, maybe it's because G was an only child and she was almost looking for that sibling relationship, whereas Kate's children had their own siblings, so weren't looking for it. But
and I think it was interesting because as far as I remember, I don't think that necessarily all of Kate's children had exactly the same biology, but they were still siblings. And I think, I guess what it just shows is how families are, they're made in hearts. They're not made in biology. And
so true.
And so you can have a brother from another mother. You can have that, and that can, you know, that can be your brother, and it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't have to be the biology though. It doesn't have to be. It is in the hearts, it's in minds. Which again, I think is something that article completely missed.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it's not about that biology. It's not necessarily even about the person that is carrying the child. That, you know, families are definitely made in hearts, I think.
And that, you know, we had, you know, if you think of Kate and Gina, they didn't know their intended parents before they went on their journey. And similarly, I think G's parents didn't know their surrogate until they'd gone through an agency. So it was all very much sort of, there's a big getting to know you process in place for all of their journeys. But then we spoke to Sophie and Em, and they were totally sort of the other end of the spectrum's friends for God knows how long.
Yeah, and that was such an interesting conversation to have, because it was, you know, in many ways, obviously there were similarities, but in many ways there were some really quite big differences about the way that they'd done their journeys. Again, it was an independent journey, but it was very different from the way that we'd sort of done ours. That, you know, there was, as I remember, there wasn't much of a contract. You know, expenses weren't anywhere sort of near the, I guess, the sort of the formality that we'd had.
I think there wasn't that sort of, like, you know, that we have the on the X week of, you know, or the X date of each month, you're going to make sure that this set amount of money transfers over. And yeah, you know, that wasn't there, and I guess it isn't there when you do it with friends. But very different to someone who sort of, I guess, as well, when you're a first timer and you don't have a surrogate and you're sort of joining the Facebook communities to meet someone, it's quite pressured at times. And I guess must have been lovely to sort of know that your friend has just offered to do this for you.
I mean, I think, I don't know, I can't remember if you had, but I definitely had friends and my sister mention that it might be a possibility to sort of go down that route, and none of those ever sort of, you know, came to fruition. So I just think to have that to have that friend who like genuinely is it is. And I think it's a lot more than just the friendship. I think it's being at the right point
in your life,
when it happens. But if all of those things come together, it is a really beautiful thing, although not without its issues.
Yeah, and what you don't want to do is put strain on what is, you know, a lovely friendship. And I guess carrying your friend's baby is one thing that might just do that. So you probably have to sort of tread cautiously and have other considerations that we maybe didn't have, sort of getting into an arrangement with someone that we didn't know before surrogacy was on the radar. But, you know, I think it's lovely that they have that connection and that sort of childhood friendship, and you know, the child that's now here as a result of the two of them coming together is gonna, you know, we started off talking about, will your child know their surrogate? Well, you know, of course in that situation they're going to be in each other's lives for years to come, and actually I think that's really, really lovely. And it's such a nice environment to raise a child in, you know, to have access to the person who brought them to life.
Yeah, beautiful. And I guess you do hope that in these situations everything works out, which it did for these guys. I know that we both probably know of sort of, you know, a couple of relationships where it hasn't necessarily been as good as it could be. And I thought it was interesting that Natalie, when we spoke to her, so Natalie was a lawyer that we spoke to later on in the series. And it was interesting that she sort of spoke about how actually a lot of the couples that she thinks needed the most guidance were people who were sort of friends and families. Mm. And it was just because sometimes when it's friends and families, some of those harder issues can be more difficult to talk about.
And I wonder if, you know, when you're going into this with friends and family, maybe you approach it from a different angle. Sort of, I guess when I was coming into it, I wanted to know almost everything that could go wrong so that I sort of worked backwards from that point and made sure it didn't go wrong. But I guess if you come at it as your friends and you think this is it's always going to be great because you've had a friendship that's lasted however long and it's, you know, it's come through whatever it's gone through, you know, whatever adversities you've faced before that, you think you can go through anything. And I wonder
figure it out when it happens.
Yeah, figure it out sort of thing. And that's what Natalie's almost saying, that, you know, actually there are really hard conversations to have that maybe you don't necessarily want to have with your friend because it's awkward.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is probably the case. I think as long, you know, if things go well, then you probably can sort of wing it that little bit more with a friend or family. But if they don't, I guess that's when it perhaps turns, you know, that's when you need that extra little bit of support.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess Soph and Em are clearly very passionate about their surrogacy journey and their involvement in the surrogacy community. And, you know, they're working alongside Mike and Wes, who joined us from Two Dads UK. And, you know, they've now set up My Surrogacy Journey, a new sort of surrogacy agency to the market. And that was a very interesting conversation to sort of hear their journey and, you know, how they, I guess for me, actually, one of the really interesting things was to hear someone who's from a same sex couple, because we've not had a guest who were same sex before. And, you know, we've always said that actually when you come to surrogacy from a heterosexual perspective, you've usually suffered trauma or tragedy of some sort to bring you here. Whereas when you're a same sex couple, a gay couple, you know, as soon as they sort of knew that they were committed to each other and they wanted a family, surrogacy was always going to be the natural route to parenthood for them. So it was lovely to sort of to hear that and to hear sort of how romantic almost their journey was.
Yeah, it was really nice talking to them. They were just, and it was such a good episode because I you know, they're so easy to talk to and just, and the perfect people to be sort of going like, you know, taking this one step further, and with all of the sort of the help and support that they've given so many couples over the years. So I just think they've put a really great team together. You know, Gina's involved as well as Sophie and Em in that sort of team. So yeah, I think it'll be a really interesting venture to follow.
Yeah. And nice that it's been set up from the intended parent perspective. I think part of the sort of success of what will be my surrogacy journey will probably be based on the fact that they come at it from people who've been through surrogacy from an IP perspective and know firsthand what people actually need, you know, to get them through. And, you know, like you and I have both said it, and, you know, you make your analogy about, you know, holidays, but, you know, some people want to do it independently, and that's fine, and, you know, it worked out well for
you. We're definitely offering like the Shangri-La version of surrogacy. It was definitely absolutely. If I won the lottery, that would be the way that I would go. It did sound absolutely amazing. I think it's add on offer.
For people who are looking to go through sort of an agency, I think that's, you know, I think they say they have more than 50 member benefits on their platform, which, you know, which is incredible. And, you know, they both said it in their episode that, you know, different people choose to take different routes, and my surrogacy journey isn't for everyone, but for those people that it is for, I think it's, you know, it's a great proposition, and it will help, you know, many, many surrogates and many IPs, and hopefully create lots of lovely, lovely families as a result. And what, you know, one of the benefits that they do offer is legal support. And, you know, we spoke about that, and, you know, we've spoken about having Natalie on and how much she sort of shared her wisdom. And I think there were sort of maybe a few gaps in our knowledge in terms of, you know, things that we hadn't ever experienced, but Natalie.
Mm. Yeah. I was completely fangirling with Natalie. Like, I mean, just her name has been, like, for me, you know, as soon as I looked into surrogacy, her name just kept coming up and up and up, you know. And there's so much for sort of a not just a fountain of knowledge, but just a sort of somebody who's been there for an awful long, long time and seen that landscape change, and did, you know, really sort of know that sort of ins and outs of, which you need to obviously if you're in sort of that surrogacy law. And she has been at the forefront of a lot of different changes. We talked at the end, didn't we, when we sort of asked her about sort of surrogacy. Everything sort of she said was very measured, and it was very good, solid advice you know, for anybody who is just starting out you know, on their sort of surrogacy journey. And I think for both of us as well, you know, we did bring up, neither of us had actually gone and got that legal support, because it felt like, at sometimes, like, again, I think, like, both of us are the sort of people that think, you know, we can just, let's just muddle through it ourselves, we'll find out, you know, we find out what we need to by researching it ourselves. But actually, I do think having somebody that knows their stuff is one less thing to worry about.
And I think, if I think back to my first journey, I really wanted, my primary thing when I, you know, my primary objective when I joined the groups was to find a match. That was what I wanted to do. But what Natalie sort of, what she sort of brought to the party was, you know, that's not all you want, though, is it? What you want is ultimately to have a parental order granted for a child that you have through surrogacy, and you start at that point. So in order to get your parental order, what do you need to do? And actually, that's quite refreshing. If you sort of think about the end goal, you think, okay, yeah, I do need to find a surrogate, but actually I need to make sure I sort of hit all of these tick boxes along the way to ensure that parental order is granted. And obviously, sort of, you and I learned that through the community, but having that sort of figure of authority, I guess, or that person who is just, you know, she's an expert in her field, and it's probably really, well, it is really helpful to have someone set out in black and white what you actually need to do to get that parental order granted, rather than sort of.
And I think especially, I know for ourselves, we, you know, the second parental order was far more complicated than the first, and it didn't need to be, but the court that we went through the second time just wasn't as, well, I mean, neither of them particularly seemed to know exactly what they were doing. But the second one, if we hadn't been through the first, the second one I think would have been a lot more confusing. And again, when the courts don't necessarily always seem to know what they're doing, having somebody who can say, yes, you've done everything right, you've filled, you've ticked the right boxes, you've filled the forms in correctly.
Yeah.
I think that is, it is definitely one less thing to worry about. And the other thing that I found fascinating, sort of talking to Natalie, was about all of these sort of reforms, I guess, that are due, I think, is it next year?
Yeah.
I mean, that will all be really interesting. I mean, we're all obviously hoping for a change that will mean that at the point of birth, you would be, as an IP, the legal parent of the child. I think that's the big one that we're all hoping for. I think the concern that that I had was that it seemed like perhaps independent surrogacy.
It definitely felt like, you know, through the conversations with Natalie and actually with Mike and Wes as well, that sort of the reforms are going to favour agencies because they are able to sort of instill more of a framework and maybe there's sort of more ability to regulate what goes on in an agency versus on sort of independent platforms, which are technically sort of social media groups. But, you know, I do hope that there's a solution there, because I think we've both said it before that, you know, we feel really passionately about independent surrogacy for a number of reasons, because people should have the choice on whether they want to go through an agency or not. But, you know, it breaks my heart to think that someone might not be able to sort of pursue their journey because, A, they can't afford an agency fee, or B, ratios are against them and they can't even join an agency. And
I mean, if I look back to those agencies when I first started looking, all being full, what was that light at the end of the tunnel was discovering independent surrogacy. And so, to take that away. And I do think it seems like, especially if you're going through a clinic because you're doing a GS journey, or, you know, you can do TS through a clinic. It's obviously more expensive, but, you know, the clinic, you feel like the clinic should be able to carry out any of those checks and balances that the agencies will be. So, yeah, really hopeful that independent will still be able to go along.
What speaking to Natalie just sort of showed us was that there's just everything's evolving, everything's moving, and, you know, surrogacy is becoming sort of more common. You know, it's never going to be sort of a massive sort of route to parenthood for hundreds of thousands of people, but there are more and more births through surrogacy. We're seeing that every year. And what, you know, in on one hand you've got the lawyer giving their expertise, and then we had Richard at sort of the end of the season who was talking to us about sort of changes and advances in science and medicine, and some of that conversation
completely blows my mind. That was just absolutely incredible.
You know, again, Richard was someone we sort of stumbled upon through sort of just being a part of this community, and this sort of, I guess, cancer community is how I found Richard. But his knowledge was immense, and, you know, the conversations he was having about sort of fertility preservation in young girls, young boys, and, you know, the options that are there for women, and, you know,
hopefully in the future there's not gonna, like, cancer itself might not necessarily be around, which would be the, you know, the best thing. But to think that having that option to remove the ovaries and harvest the eggs outside of the body, like, to me was just like, that was sci-fi. That was like, we were getting to sort of sci-fi.
Did he say, because he said you just had to take, for girls who hadn't gone through puberty, that, did he say that they were taking sort of ovarian tissue and growing it?
Yeah, so, well, you could definitely remove the ovaries, and you could You could have your treatment and wait till your treatment was finished and then put them back in again. And then he did, he was talking about sort of how you could then potentially grow, harvest eggs, which just was absolutely mind-blowing to me.
Without the need for sort of the 14-day IVF process and all the drugs that sort of...
Exactly. And then it suddenly just becomes just as easy for a woman as it is for the man. That's what I was like. We're there. You know, come on. We've got to get to the stage where, you know, with a guy just, you know, walks in, reads a few magazines, knocks one out. That's a job done. And you just feel like, but for the woman, it's like 14 days of injecting yourself with hormones that could lead to sort of any, you know, lead you back in hospital like it did for me, to sort of think that there's going to be a day when that isn't necessarily the case. Just
and in all seriousness, you know, there are so many women in our community who are young, who haven't had children, who are looking for fertility preservation options, who don't sometimes have the time to go through an IVF process, whose cancer is too aggressive and hormonally sensitive to go through IVF. And if you think for those women, there's a chance, or on the horizon, there is, you know, groundbreaking research that's showing that you could take immature eggs out of a woman without waiting for 2 weeks or injecting hormones and grow them sort of in a lab. That is the answer to so many people's prayers. I mean, I think I would have grabbed that with both hands as someone who went through 14 days of pumping estrogen into a body that was feeding an estrogen sensitive cancer.
Yeah.
What a breakthrough.
Yeah. And I mean, for both of us, those are changes on the horizon that would have significantly impacted our own journeys. And but it's funny, I guess we're both in a place now where we're happy with the outcome. So there was, like, for me it was just excitement for whoever comes next, for whoever is, you know, gonna have to go through what we went through, to know that those options may well be available is just it just felt like just really positive, really positive development.
It's not easy to make decisions around what you want to do with your family when you're staring cancer in the face, and your relationship might not be in the right place to make those decisions, or you might be single and, you know, you haven't given children a second thought at the point at which cancer sort of arrives with you, and to then have sort of science on your side would be brilliant. And, you know, our final two guests, Kaz and Lauren, they're both examples of that person, aren't they, who haven't yet decided what they want to do when it comes to becoming parents.
Yeah, and so to have those options, I think, available just becomes even more important.
And I think in Richard sort of he spoke to us about sort of the decision aid that him and his team have created up at sort of Edinburgh University on how to deal with cancer and fertility. And I think it's called Cancer, Fertility and Me. And I genuinely urge anyone who's sort of listening to this, who's in that position where they're looking at potentially losing their fertility through a cancer diagnosis, to go and have a read of that, because it's a nice sort of, let's break this down step by step and see what we're looking at and what we're dealing with before we make any massive decisions on.
Yeah, because we've both said that at the time that you get that cancer diagnosis, that, you know, you've got, your head is just, I mean, it's a fog anyway, but to think about sort of all you can really think about is the next week, the next month. It's very difficult to think, you know, am I going to want a family in next year? Am I still going to even be here next year? I mean, if you're getting that sort of diagnosis in your 20s, it must be even more difficult to make those decisions. And I know as well, like, talking to Asmina, who was the Macmillan nurse, to hear how she didn't get all of that information. And so her decisions, you know, whether she would have made a different decision or not, it is difficult to say, but you just feel like not having that information, again, was heartbreaking to hear that.
Yeah.
that somebody then, you know, made some decision based on not having all of that information and not having somebody to guide them through a process that they perhaps didn't want to talk about.
Yeah, and that sort of affects the rest of their life, doesn't it? And, you know, I think as Mina said, that she wished that, you know, there was more information around, and there was stuff like this podcast around at the time of her diagnosis, and things that would help her. But, you know, for all of the heartache that she went through, you know, again, what an inspiring human being. She's paying it back, and, you know, she's paying it forward even to everyone who comes through Macmillan's door by being a Macmillan specialist. And, you know, she's the person who's reaching the community that we all want to help, you know, isn't she? She's right at the forefront of it.
Yeah. And having, I mean, just such an incredible person to talk to, who had been through so much and yet was so positive and so passionate about the work that she was doing.
Yeah.
And you can just see how much she would help anybody in sort of the position that we found ourselves found herself in.
Yeah. I mean, didn't she stay in the office until 10 PM, like, to talk to us, to help others out there who need this information? And you know, she was absolutely incredible. And I think actually Asmina is someone that'll hold a really special place in my heart, because it not only is she, you know, an incredible asset to Macmillan, but I think personally she's one of our biggest fans, isn't she? And she's, you know, she's been great and really helped you and I, and, you know, I think we'll keep in touch for a long time still.
And it was nice to sort of hear how it's nice, you know, obviously we're sitting here, we're talking to each other, we put out these episodes, but it's difficult necessarily always to know whether whether what we're doing, how it's being received, is it helping people? And so it was nice to hear from her how great that she thought it was. And that is the sort of thing that does really warm your heart and think, you know, we're doing a good thing by having these conversations. And you know, I mean, sort of leading on from that, again, the conversation that we have in, it is so important. Bringing it back to sort of Kaz and Lauren, the thing that I always just find really interesting, I find it really interesting when you talk about it as well, is how different all of our different backgrounds and families and cultures are, and how having these conversations is just really important, because the world is changing. The world is changing in terms of the law. The world is changing in terms of medicine and science development.
Mm.
And, you know, but these cultures are sometimes quite stubborn, and you know, they don't move along as fast as the science does.
Yeah.
And so we need to keep having these conversations to make sure that
we definitely were getting that message, I guess, from Kaz, that the sort of Turkish Cypriot community I think she was, you know, and I know firsthand that it's a community that talks about IVF and does IVF incredibly well. But then when it comes to asking someone else to carry your child, it's a whole different ball game, and the conversation sort of ends there. And I guess a lot of it comes from fear and unknown, and, you know, uncertainty, and, you know, ultimately sort of stigma and taboo comes from that place anyway, of, you know, not being informed about what lies ahead of you. And these conversations and these people who are sort of, you know, influences in the community are the ones who are going to break down those sort of stigmas and taboo and shed light on what is really just a beautiful thing. And you know, like we said right at the top of this chat, women empowering women in the most beautiful way.
Yeah. Which is, and I guess that's why, you know, we're both really grateful for Macmillan giving us this opportunity to do season two. And it's, you know, we've spoken to some just really interesting, really inspiring people, and, you know, we've got lots of ideas for season three as well, because we want to hear more inspirational stories, and we want to hear sort of more, you know, more and more people. We are perhaps quite a little niche, but more and more people are having to turn to surrogacy you know, seeing that it's an option for the girl next door, for the guy next door. It's not just for the celebs. And so, it's really important to keep having these conversations. And, you know, there's so many more interesting people and different journeys that we can...
We've already got them lined up for season three because we couldn't fit them all in season two. But I think, you know, what you're saying there about sort of, you know, us being quite niche, what I've found since I've sort of become quite an active member of the Trying to Conceive community, I think that people, if they knew more about surrogacy and knew that it was so much more accessible and it was normalised more, like you said before, might look to surrogacy sooner. Rather than sort of go through multiple failed cycles of IVF, the cost can probably, you know, balance out. You know, it probably can balance out, and it might be a way that sort of takes pressure off an intended mother who's really struggling to conceive naturally, or, you know, be the light at the end of the tunnel that a set of IPs want. And, you know,
even just having it at the back of your mind that it is a possibility. Exactly. I just think having that at the back of your mind as a possibility takes the weight off your shoulders a little bit, so that, you know, when you're going through the IVF to see if it works for yourself, makes that just a little bit less stressful.
Yeah.
Knowing that this isn't the last roll of the dice.
Yeah. And I think I've spoken to some people in the community around, like, going from, you can't conceive naturally. Okay, you go to IVF and you try and use your own egg and your partner's sperm. Okay, that doesn't work. The next step you take is, I'm going to look at an egg donor or a sperm donor because something's not working here. And if you had it in your head, like you say, that, okay, and if the egg and the sperm donor, you know, that still doesn't take, then your next step is surrogacy. It's almost like that final run on the ladder. It just needs to be socialized and talked about a bit more, so people know it's an option that's there. You know, we're not for a second saying it's really easy, it's going to be a walk in the park. But it's like you say, just having that knowledge that there is still one more option.
And I think as well, for different people, it might be. I mean, I don't know, sort of myself, whether somebody might sort of consider the donor egg before surrogacy. Somebody else might want to consider surrogacy before they went down donor egg, because the carrying bit might not necessarily be as important as the genetic.
Yeah. And it will depend on it. It is
totally different for different people. I think that's what's so lovely that's come out of these conversations that we've been having. Whether you use an agency, whether you do independent, whether you are looking sort of to a donor, whether you're looking to surrogacy, it's going to be very different for everybody. But I think information is 100% the key. And that's why, you know, that's why we're just sort of so passionate about putting that information out there.
Yeah. And the stories of hope, because, you know, we've said how important those stories of hope are. And I hope that this season has brought, you know, a number of stories of hope out and given people something to think about, and particularly people who have come from the cancer community who like you and I found themselves facing infertility at one of the darkest times of their lives. And, you know, a massive, massive thank you to Macmillan Cancer Support for sponsoring us this season and for making these conversations possible and for allowing us to access a community that very much needs to hear this conversation.
Yeah, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
it's taken longer than we expected, as always, because, you know, children, illnesses, everything gets thrown
COVID,
in here.
But... pandemic. We've done this in the middle of a pandemic. Season two is like the pandemic season.
This is true. And the triplets came. So we've done well. we've got it out.
I still think we've done it in a shorter time than we did season one. So
we did. Season three might be even faster. Who knows? Thank you so much to everyone who's listened to us. We really enjoy hearing your feedback, and we really, really appreciate the support you guys give us. And, you know, if you have enjoyed the season, do leave us a review on iTunes. It massively helps us. And we hope to speak to you and hear from you in the not too distant future.
Yes.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.